Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where I, Rod Jones, content manager, and Kate Cooper, head of research policy and standards at the Institute, take a critical look at what's been happening in the world of leadership and management up to the 3rd of August 2020. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Our first story, Kate, is asking how can leaders fight the home working resistance? LBC talk host Nick Ferrari used his morning show this week to launch an irritable rant at blue chip firms that have decided to keep their staff at home for the next few months. And in a recent opinion piece, Telegraph writer Tom Welch warned readers of an unholy alliance of columnists, politicians, corporate strategists and trendy academics who want to make home working the norm. This actually comes after survey results from the Chartered Governance Institute, ICSA, that revealed that 52% of respondents will continue to work from home this summer, while 19% will go back to the office on a part-time basis, and only a further 19% plan to head back to the office full time. Kate, how can leaders who are passionate about the new way of working take on this current negative messaging?
Well, for a nation that was known to be cold and reserved, we've really become very passionate of late and very polar in the views that we adopt. And we have this example of the let's get back to the office brigade, who cannot even begin to think that maybe it only suits them and it doesn't suit everybody else. And because they have a need to be in the same geographical location as their colleagues, and they like the stimulus of an office environment, then it's good for everybody. I think similarly, the extreme home workers, if you'd like, are forgetting that actually some people thrive, they get an energy from being with others. And you can't always replicate that for everybody with video conferencing, etc. So it depends, as all leadership does, doesn't it, Rod, in the context, what suits the team, what suits the organisation, what suits the company, the sector, the industry, what works? Because we've certainly found out that we can be far more flexible about where we work and how we work than we would have even imagined a year ago.
Thank you, Kate. And our next story is a link to this, because this is about real-time research by Microsoft scientists who've been analysing data on its newly remote workforce. The comprehensive findings have been reported in Harvard Business Review, and they can be grouped into a handful of big themes such as changes in work norms and culture and impact on managers. But I've selected the impact of remote working on human connections. The researchers found that on their team around Microsoft and across many of their customers' companies, a trend cropped up very quickly after the shift to remote work: virtual social meetings. Responding to the lack of natural touch points, such as grabbing lunch in the cafeteria, popping by someone's desk, employees found new touch points. In that group, these touch points range from group lunches to happy hours with themes such as pajama day and meet my pet. Overall, social meetings went up 10% in a month. And at the same time, schedule one-on-ones amongst employees went up 18%, showing that people would sooner add meetings to their schedules than lose connections. Kate, what does this research tell us about the importance of the human element whilst working remotely?
Those of us who have been in this field for a while, Rod, like us, will be very familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And although Maslow died 50 years ago, that recognition of how important we as humans find social connections is as true as when he published his paper in 1943, as it is today. So we like to connect. We like to be close to others. Not all of us all of the time, of course. So I'm not at all surprised that we're finding ways of keeping those important social connections, because it's a need. It makes us feel part of a group. It makes us feel recognised. It makes us feel important. And although we haven't been working outside of the home for that long, only since the Industrial Revolution in the context of history, we now have a work family. We want to be with those people that we used to see every day. And as our own research showed, people living on their own do miss their colleagues. We found that out even before COVID. So it's great that people are just getting good at working differently.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Our next story asks if diversity pipelines are failing. The Women Count 2020 report from the diversity and inclusion consultancy The Pipeline suggests that efforts to support women into senior roles within the FTSE 350 are slipping backwards, with firms in that elite group marked by a woeful lack of female representation at the top. The report points out 68% of FTSE 350 companies do not have a single female executive committee member in a profit and loss role, raising serious questions about the desire for positive change in so many businesses and the prospects for women seeking to make it to CEO. The practical upshot of all this is that large companies are leaving money on the table. FTSE 350 firms with more than 33% female membership on their executive committees have a net profit margin over 10 times greater than firms with no women in committee roles. In a foreword, former Prime Minister Theresa May writes, "Very quickly, firms which find themselves on the wrong side of history on this and other social issues will discover that they cannot recruit the talent they need to succeed. This report should be a wake-up call to them." Kate, what is going wrong here and how can it be put right?
Well, this is a wake-up call, and yes, we are failing, and the business case is increasingly compelling for more diverse boards, yet somehow it's not happening. And it's not happening, in my opinion, because all of these decisions ultimately are individual ones. They are people being given jobs, privileged people being promoted, being offered opportunities and being convinced, and why wouldn't they be, that they're exactly the right person for the job and that they must have achieved that through what is known euphemistically as a level playing field. And so many women particularly are not getting these opportunities, but people, I think, collectively are convincing themselves that somehow these promotions have been fair. We have to now start thinking seriously about quotas. We have to think much more about positive action. And of course, individuals will be disappointed, because if you get more of one, you by definition get less of another. So at an individual level, it might seem harsh and it might seem unfair. But unless we do something about it, as Theresa May points out, we are going to lose out the bottom line where it really hurts.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story looks at research by Laura Gilge and Caitlin Woolley, reported in the Harvard Business Review, that questions a common assumption that if we are flexible and set our own schedule, this actually empowers and motivates us. The research found that the opposite is often true. Spending weekends or holidays working undermines one of the most important factors that determines whether people persist in their work, that is, intrinsic motivation. When people engage in work during time that they think of as leisure time, such as a weekend, they experience conflict between their expectations and reality, and as a result, they find their work less engaging and less meaningful. The research goes on to say that whether we enjoy the work we do is shaped not only by the type of activities we engage in, but also when we engage in those activities. And managers can support their employees by encouraging them not to work during time off, as the data suggests that working during time off can undermine people's intrinsic motivation and reduce the effort that employees put into their work. Kate, what does this research tell us about keeping our teams as productive and engaged as possible?
Well, we haven't had the big picture research results yet, have we, Rod, about what has been the overall impact on productivity. But anecdotally, we've certainly heard at the Institute that people are reporting higher levels of productivity. They're able to work very successfully at home. And one of the problems that some have been having is they're working too hard. They're using what would normally have been commuting time for work time. Now, how well you adapt, how good you are at managing those blurred boundaries will very much be a function of, you know, your own personality, but also the culture of the organisation you worked for. If you were working in a very strict sort of 9-to-5, where everybody came in on a Monday and told everybody to have a good weekend on a Friday, then you will be struggling with flexing your working day, working at 6 o'clock in the morning and, you know, 10 o'clock at night, if that helps you manage the other domestic demands on your time. So we've got to get better at it, a bit like we were saying earlier with the "you must go back to the office" brigade. We're not good at it yet, and there will be that feeling of discomfort if previously 9 o'clock on a Monday, we were always in the all team meeting, and now we're taking the dog out for a walk because we know that we're going to be working in the evening. And so I can understand that people would report feelings of disquiet. I just think it's a bit early. And what we need to do is to be encouraging people to be as productive in a way that works for them, rather than going back to the earlier piece, try and come up with a blanket solution and saying everybody is better if they log off at 5 o'clock. Of course, that's not the case. And it's not like we haven't known that for a while.
Okay, thank you, Kate. And those stories, I'm sure we will come back to in the next few months. Well, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights onto these stories.
Thank you, Rod.